So we are. So we have to resolve just one question that was asked last time. In Parakhat, we had talked about the Ari Mikla, the cities of refuge, and Sima had asked a question of when did the Ari Mikla stop? When did they stop using these cities of refuge? So I brought you some sources just to have a little bit of information about it. It's actually not straightforward. If you take a look at the first source on the sheet, this... I do. I can even give you... If you take a look at the first source, this is a statement in the Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law. The Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Isserles, writes, Kol chai ve-misos based in Bizman hazeh, ein bi-adeinu lahalkosan, o lahaglosan, o lahargan, o lahovtan. He says, people who are liable for execution, he says, we don't have the ability, our courts are not licensed, and licensed within Jewish law. Now, he's not even dealing with a secular law problem, but within Jewish law, our courts are no longer eligible. Oh, I think I didn't start this.
Oh, I forgot to start this one.
No. The courts are no longer eligible to lash them, to exile them, to execute them. And one of the things that was mentioned was exile. That a Beis Din, a court, does not have the ability to send somebody into Galut anymore. These Ari Mikla no longer function. So the question is, when and why did they stop? So one approach is that they stop when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. And it's picking up on an interesting quirk in the Psukim. The Torah gives us the laws of Ir Miklat several different times. The third appearance of the laws of Ir Miklat are in Devarim Perek Dalet. For those who have a Tanakh here, if you take a look at the fourth chapter in Devarim, the end of the chapter, it gives us, again, this mitzvah of setting aside the cities of refuge, and then it does a very strange segue. In Perek Dalet, in chapter 4, sentences 41 to 43, Mem Aleph to Mem Gimel, are about these cities of refuge, and then sentence 44 is a pasuk that should sound familiar. Right? What is Pasuk Mem Dalet? Vizos HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. Right? That's the Pasuk right after this, in the same paragraph. There's no paragraph break in the Torah. And so the question is, and Medrash always cares about language, and things like this just bother the Medrash, and it has to give you an answer. Why is this right before Vizos HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe, which is not about City of Refuge, it's about this whole body of teaching that Moshe has given the Jews. And this is the Torah that Moshe gave the Jewish people. And that's what's bothering the sages as they look at it. Parenthetically, the pasuk ends there. In other words, it's Vizos HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe Lifnei Bnei Yisrael. What does it not say? Right, we're used to saying Vizos HaTorah when they pick up the Torah, when they do Hanva, and we have more words in our sentence. Those words come from a completely different pasuk in Chumash. Completely different, with a big different beginning. The pasuk that it comes from goes, it's from Parshas Bahaloscha, when they're moving in the desert, and it says, Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yisau, Es Mishmeres Hashem Shamar, or Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe.
So we add
a little bit of the end of one sentence to Vizos HaTorah, which is why some Minhagim, I think Chabad does this, will actually bring the entire other pasuk, because you don't want to quote just a piece of a pasuk, so they give you the entire thing. So their Vizos HaTorah is a lot longer. But what we do is we sandwich together two psukim to say, this is the Torah which Moshe placed before the Jewish people, but we also add on, Al Pi Hashem Biyad Moshe, it was from God, because otherwise what you could end up saying is, this is Moshe's Torah. So we have to add on, Al Pi Hashem. But in any case, the Medrash is bothered by this link between the city of refuge of all mitzvos, and this is the Torah that Moshe gave the Jews. So take a look at source number two.
Why can't I do the next pasuk? Because the next pasuk says, Eila Haidu Bahukim, so maybe the Zohar Torah is an intro to that.
Right, but the problem is there's no paragraph break.
It's saying that the Yirmi Klatter, the Chodit, it's referencing what's before it, right? The Zot, like what is the Zot?
Right. It can't just be the Yirmi Klatter, but that's the question, is why is it there? Yeah. Why not give it its own paragraph? If it's a summary of everything that came before, then it should really stand on its own. So take a look at source number two, please. This is the Medrash in Devarim Rabbah. Lanus Shama Rotea, I skipped a part that is not germane for us. The Amr Yisrael. Israel said, the Jews said to Moshe, Rabbeinu Moshe. I guess they did the last name first, right? Rabbeinu Moshe. Are miklat einan betelem la'olam? Will these cities of refuge remain forever? Amar lahem lav. He says no. Elasof beis hamikdash asir lecharei v'va'are miklat betelos. The beis hamikdash is going to be destroyed and the cities of refuge will end. So Amar le Yisrael v'heach anu osin. So they said, what are we going to do now? Miyad anu mesim. We're going to die. What does that mean, we're going to die? Without cities of refuge, we're going to die? In what way?
Because of the murderers.
Right, the accidental murderers will have no place to go. So, miyad anu mesim. So Amar lahem lav. He says, no, don't worry about it. Ela ha-Torah lifnechem. You still have Torah. Shehi matzelas yosem e'ari miklat. That is better protection than cities of refuge. Because she'ari miklat ain't called in ela kodos, ela l'shogigin, v'ha-Torah pona es ha-shogigin v'es ha-mezidin. Torah will rescue people even if they did it intentionally. And that's what you get from this pasuk, v'zos ha-Torah she'sa Moshe, mahu v'zos, and this is the Torah, and adding to what came before, asa mosaf al-ari miklat, it's adding to the ir miklat, ma-ari miklat matzilos min amisa ha-Torah came. Just like the city of refuge saves the accidental murderer from death, so too, the Torah will save the accidental murderer from death. So rather than put them in separate paragraphs, Hashem links them to say, here's one thing you can do if you killed someone by accident, if you can go to the city of refuge. However, there's another mechanism, which is Torah. Now, how is Torah going to save him from the angry brother of his victim? I'm not quite sure.
How about intentional? It says it's saving him from intentional death.
Right.
The Torah says...
Right. So the only suggestion I can give is that it will keep it from happening in the first place. It's not, if you kill somebody, you know, go to yeshiva. Right? That, I don't think that's what it's suggesting. I think it's suggesting that people who make Torah their refuge are going to be careful enough and certainly will not fall into intentional murder. That's what I expect the Medrash is trying to say.
Or maybe it's the person who would, the family that would take revenge would know that these laws are in the Torah and that you have to have two witnesses and you can't just summarily go out and execute somebody because...
Right. The only problem I have with that is, first, there is a concept of Goel Hadam, meaning he is able to do this. Mm-hmm. This Redeemer of the Blood is able to do this and get away with it. And also that it says the intentional murderer, too, is going to be protected.
Also, if you were protected, then why do we need the Arei Miklat at all? Like, it kind of doesn't make sense to say we need it now, but we're not going to need it then because
right,
then we'll have
just
to form.
Use Torah. We have Torah right now. Right, that's another valid point. So I think what the Medrash is trying to say is involve yourself in Torah, and that way you won't do this in the first place. I think that's the goal. But the reason why I'm bringing it is you know, this is a taste of how to look at a Medrash, because we learned that where it came from and then what it was teaching. But the point for us is destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is it. Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, cities of refuge stop. And that's one approach. But there's another approach in source number 3 from Rav Shimon Moshe Diskin, in which he says that it's because the cities of refuge are the cities of the Levium, not as two separate entities, but rather it's dependent on it. Only as long as you have cities that are Levite cities, do you have cities that are cities of refuge. If it's not going to function as a city for the Levium, then it's not going to function as an Ir Miklat either. And since the cities for the Levium, with all of their rules, stop with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, therefore, this is also going to stop. I'm not going to read it inside only because I want to make sure we get to Yehoshua.
Right? Meaning, the whole cycle works on the death of the Kohen. So if you don't have that anymore institution, then you can't have everything else falls apart, no?
If you don't have a Kohen Gadol, well, no, it just means that he won't get out.
Ever.
Oh, so it just means, yeah.
Yeah, there actually is discussion about that. Yeah, if someone was in an Ir Miklat at a time when everything functioned, and then he was sort of one of that last generation, and then the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, and there was no Kohen Gadol and so forth, so he's just in there forever.
But what about Kohen Gadol part? Because anyway, there's no Levium cities.
So right, so he's saying there's no city of Levium, therefore there's no city, it's not called an Ir Miklat anymore.
He just got killed by the Romans. So he's just still there? Right. Then he's not in.
Correct. At this point, it falls apart because there's no city. as opposed to saying it's because there's no Kohen Gadol anymore, in which case the answer is you lost your get-out-of-jail-free card.
But the previous Kohen Gadol might not be functioning as a Kohen Gadol right now because there's no Beit HaMikdash anymore. But it's still there. When he dies, it doesn't apply?
Nope. I believe not. The so that's the second approach, and then the last approach I brought you, just Rav Aaron Halevi in the Sefer HaChinuch, says it's because this is a function of the Sanhedrin. Just like the Sanhedrin judges other cases, and this is sort of like what the Rama was saying in source number one, that it's like any other function of the courts. And if you don't have the ability to handle capital cases, then you don't have the ability to handle refuge cases either, and that's when it ends. Okay, side note, there's more I could refer you to if you want. But now, we come back to Perek Chaf Aleph, chapter 21. And we introduced the chapter last time, before the break, by reading from the Chumash, where we get the designation of the cities of the Levium. And we saw that there are two mitzvos involved of setting up cities of Levium. According to Abarbanel, the Levium receive the core city, these 48 cities, they get the core city, but the surrounding areas are not theirs. And we read from the Sefer HaChinuch about the benefits of having cities for the Levium everywhere. We said that, number one, separate from why the cities of refuge are also cities of the Levium, but why have the Levium scattered around the country? So one answer was because you want to take care of the Levium. They don't have any land of their own, so this way they'll be taken care of. A second answer was that it's to educate the Jews, because the job of the Levium, when they're not working in the Beis HaMikdash, is to be teachers. So this way, they're scattered around the Shvatim, scattered around the tribes. Everyone has the opportunity to learn from the Levium. And then third was the punishment element, which we talked about with Shimon's cities also, where we said that Shimon is scattered among Yehuda. He just gets cities in Yehuda. So Levium are also scattered again because of what happened with Shechem. So we said that last time. What I also wanted to show you, though, and that's what you have here on the sheet, is that the cities were more than just cities in which Levium will live. They had special zoning rules, which were designed to make them beautiful cities. We already saw a little bit about this in the psukim that we had read last time, but take a look at source number 5 from the Sefer HaChinuch. He says, Lachain, because these are cities for the Levium and they're supposed to teach the people and so forth, Haya bedin liyos osan ha'arim asher yad hakol shava bahen v'lev hakol aleihem liyos betachlis hayofi v'hachemda. He says, therefore it was appropriate that these cities that everyone has an equal share in the sense that they come from all of the various tribes, and everybody's supposed to turn to them for learning. So it made sense that they should be beautiful. V'shevach kol am Yisrael b'kach, that would lead to the praise of all Israel. These cities should be the pride of the Jewish people. So that's what you're creating with the Arei HaLevim. And the Rambam writes that the rule that applies to these cities, that once there's agricultural space, once there's green space, you can't convert it to anything else. That starts with the cities of the Levium, but it actually applies to all cities in Israel. There's green space, and you can't turn it into something else. None of this urban sprawl, let's go further up Bathurst stuff. The Rambam writes that in source number 6, Mipiashmu alamdu, shezeshnemar lo yimacher, lo yishunah. They learned, the sages learned, that when the Torah says that green space may not be sold, it means it may not be altered. How did they understand that? Because he doesn't bring you the medrash on it, but it's because the Torah uses multiple verbs. Lo yimacher v'lo yigael. So why do you need two different verbs for the same lesson? The answer is one is not to sell it, and one is that it shouldn't be changed in any way. I think that's what the Medrash had said. I'd have to go back and check to be sure. But he says the field, the outlying areas, the city, all of them have to remain as they are. And so for the other Israeli cities. And on this issue of altering the zoning, Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch makes an interesting comment, which I brought you in number 7. I brought it to you just with the English, because I saw no point in bringing you the Hebrew, which is translated from the German. In other words, it went from German to Hebrew, and it went from German to English. There's no point in going from German to Hebrew to English. So he says, this law is specifically because these, meaning these cities, were given to them for eternal generations. Therefore, no generation may alter this at will. The current generation is not the sole authority, but future generations are equal in their rights. Just as they received it from their predecessors, so they should leave it for those who will come after them. It's very environmental, you know, this idea. You're not the one who gets to dictate what's going to happen. Everyone has equal access, bless you, and equal right to it.
But this wasn't just for the Ear Miklat.
Right, this is all. No, we're done with Ear Miklat. Ear Miklat is so chapter 20. No, we're at the city of Levium. But the message that's being sent, I think, is a very important message in terms of what this parak is about. Because, you know, we said this also with the previous chapter, and frankly it applied also to the division of the land, but there it was harder to see. These are not only technical clerical chapters. Like, well, someone has to list which ones are the cities of refuge, so fine, we'll devote some sukkim to it here. And someone has to list, you know, what the map is of the Levite cities, so fine, we'll list them here. They're teaching important ethical lessons at the time when the Jews have finished their conquests, and now they're going to start living in the land. So the previous parak had the lesson of the care you need to take for human life, and the concern about what's going to happen if, you know, you aren't careful and you kill somebody by accident and the bloodshed that can ensue, and the lesson about the three cities on one side and three cities on the other. We saw lessons that are being sent to the nation. I think the same thing is true here. The message that we're getting is that the Levim are not to be cloistered as monks in a Beis HaMikdash compound, which was what happened in the Midbar. Right? In the wilderness, you had the Mishkan, and around it, Levim, and then around them, you had all the other Shvatim. And maybe it was fine because everybody had access to them because they were these concentric squares. Once you come into Israel, Levim have to be spread out because Torah has to be spread out. It's not just the province of Levim and people in the Beis HaMikdash. Levim are going to live among you, and they're going to be distributed among the Shvatim, among the tribes, to be an influence. So I think that's really a key message for them as they are now starting to live up, to live in the land.
So can I ask you, all these cities and everything were carefully set up, but when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the cities of the living were also gone?
Yes, they lose their status.
So it seems to me that when they say, you know, the city should be beautiful and you should pass it on to your generations, why did nobody, just because there wasn't a people there? That's why all this fell apart there.
Right. See, the question really could only be answered if there had been a time when we didn't have a Beis HaMikdash for a reason other than we got kicked out. You know, there's too much happening at the same time in terms of the conquest by the Babylonians / Romans, and our own, you know, transfer, and the cessation of various rules that do stop with the Beis HaMikdash, to know which is which. But it seems to me that they stop legally, not only because we don't have the power to have them, but legally they lose their legal standing without a Beis HaMikdash. That's what I think is what's going on. Just as you lose Chalukas HaAretz, you lose the division of the land, you know, and who's supposed to be where, according to some. The truth is that, maybe I shouldn't say that, there's a debate about that. There's a debate about whether, hypothetically, let's say Mashiach had come yesterday, and we had determined that you were from Shevet Dan, right? So, would you be expected to go back to the Dun territories, right, in this, either the southwest or Leshem, way up in the, on the other side? Or do we say, no, we have to have a new conference, and we have to meet and divide up the land again between the Shvatim? That's actually debated. Maybe the fate of the cities of the Levium depends on what the answer is to that question. Right? Rav Soloveitchik was of the view that being kicked out meant the entire original Chalukah, the entire division, was gone. And we'd have to have
so
a brand new division.
Right. Was it redone when they had the Bai Sheng?
It appears not. You don't even have all representatives of all the Shvatim when they come back for Bai Sheni. Yeah.
But do they go back?
If you were doing Ezra next,
do they go back to where they were, or it's just like a...
No, they were lost.
How long
have
they gone?
Where their original...
70 years.
But where their 70 years. That's
not a shock.
Do they know what shepherd they are?
Some of them know, some of them do not. You have to keep in mind what happens when they go into Bavel. It's over. God has rejected us. We've been warned by the Nevi'im for generations that God was going to do this. Yeah, most of them lose hope. They become integrated in Babel. They marry Babylonians. They stop observing the most basic elements of Judaism. The example of it, to show what can happen in 70 years' time, is Soviet Russia. Right? When you think about what happened in a very short period of time, where you had people who came from what had been very proud Jewish families in the 19-teens, and by the time you hit the 1970s, they've completely forgotten that identity. This is who they became. You know, the Babylonians were no more interested in promoting Judaism than the Soviets. So it's not shocking to think that such a thing can take place. But
it's two generations, grandparents. And the child.
Two generations, and at a time when you had more people dying younger.
But they weren't told, they weren't prophesied that they were going to have another diet chain, that they were going to be coming back. That they didn't
so
know about
there
that.
Were nevuot about it. There were prophecies about it.
They wouldn't have hope then.
Realistically, the people who experienced the devastation, you can tell them everything's going to be okay. But come on. I mean, that's not the way people live. It's just not. There were those who came back, but it's far from the majority. So yeah, so eventually we'll have to learn Ezra. We'll see what happens to them. But if you want to know a little bit about it, if you go to YU Torah, you can get the archived shiur from Chagai and Zechariah. When I taught Treyaser, so Chagai and Zechariah and Malachi also are from that period. You can catch the recordings. Okay, so let's see what happens with the cities of the Levium. So we are in Perikhlef Aleph, chapter 21, and what I actually expect to do is to finish this chapter today, because there isn't a whole lot to add on it. Most of the chapter really is lists of cities. So let's see how it goes. But it begins with a request. Chapter 21, sentence 1. Vayigshu Rashei Avos HaLevium al Elazar, Kohen v'Yoshua v'Yoshua b'Nun v'Rashei Avos HaMatos l'Bnei Yisrael. The heads of the Levite tribes go to Elazar being not just the Kohen, but the Kohen Gadol, he's the son of Aharon, as well as to Yehoshua and to the heads of the Shvatim, the heads of the tribes. If this language sounds familiar to you, it's familiar because it's the same language used with the daughters of Tzlachod. When they say they want the land, it's the same thing. They go to Elazar, Yehoshua, and the heads of the tribes. Vayedabru aleihem b'Shiloh be'eretz Canaan. They speak to him in Shiloh, in the land of Canaan, le'emor, saying, Hashem tziva b'yad Moshe l'ases lanorim l'shaves. God told Moshe that we should have cities to live in. U'migrishayhen le'behem tenu, and we should have the fields outside it for our animals to graze. That's the request. Notice the emphasis on where this was. Where is it?
Shiloh.
What is Shiloh? Shiloh is the place of the Mishkan, this religious center for the Jews, which we talked about when it was first established, and which is going to become very important in chapter 22 when we get the tribes going home. The one, Reuben got half of Manasseh. That's where that's going to be very, very important. So they say, God told Moshe about the cities of the Levium. So, Yoshua, where are they? Everyone else got their land. So, Vayitnu, Pasuk Gimel, Vayitnu, V'nei Yisrael, Alevim, Inach Lasam, El Pi Hashem. So, the Levim give from, sorry, the tribes give from their portions, Es Ha'arim Ha'elev Es Migrishayhen. They do it El Pi Hashem, meaning there's some kind of a lottery going on, and they give cities, and they give their outlying areas. Vayetzei ha-goral, and this is the way the lot comes out. So what we're going to do now is psukim gimel to zayin. Sentences 3 to 7 are going to give us the basic layout of the three families of the Levium. Just to make sure that we know a little bit about the family of Levi, so we get a picture of how this works. Levi has three sons, Gershon, Kehas, and Merari, right? Those who followed the Parsha last week and this week you'll be familiar with the genealogy. Gershon, Kehas, and Merari. They have different jobs. When the Jews travel with the Mishkan, so Kehas, well, there's a subfamily within Kehas. Kehas has four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Chevron, and Uziel. Amram's family is the one that has Moshe, Aharon, Miriam, and therefore has the Kohanim. Correct. So the Kohanim, when the Jews travel, have sort of the most elevated of jobs. We'll see more about that later in terms of what they carry with them. But in general, Kohath's whole family is the one that carries the most elevated parts of the Beis HaMikdash. And then the lesser parts are given to Gershon to carry, and the least parts, and we'll talk about which is which, the least parts go to Merari to carry.
Is Kohath the eldest?
No, Gershon is the eldest. Remember, one of the first rules to know about the Torah is that the firstborn loses.
Wait,
right. The firstborn always loses.
I'm not the oldest.
I am a number two child.
But I'm not the oldest either.
Amram is possibly the oldest. It's Amram, Yitzchak, Hebron, Uziel, I think. So Amram may be the oldest there.
One
win. Not so much. I mean, really, what did he get? Right. He had to lead them when they were in Egypt. And Moshe's not the oldest. So in terms of the distribution here, we're going to talk about Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, these three. So Vayetzeh Goral Mishpachosa Kehasi. So Kehas is listed first because they're the ones who have the Kohanim in them. Vayihi Livnei Aharon HaKohen, first of all, the sons of Aharon, Kohen, Min HaLeviyim, from the Leviyim. So where does he get to be? Mimate Yehuda, Umimate HaShimoni, Umimate Vinyamin, Bagoral Arim Shlosh Esrei. So they're going to get from Yehuda, Shimon, and Binyamin a total of 13 cities. What is Yehuda, Shimon, and Binyamin? Think about it. We spent a lot of time on this. Sorry? Center south.
It has all the holy places.
It has Yerushalayim. Right? Yerushalayim is split between Yehuda and Binyamin, and Shimon is just cities within Yehuda. So it makes sense. That's where you put your Kohanim.
Yeah.
That's number one. Number two, Pasuk Hei. V'livnei Kehas Hanosarim. The remainder of Kehat. Mimishpachos Matei Ephraim, so they're going to be with Ephraim, Umimatei Dun, as well as Dun, which is close to them, just west of them, aside from the new area they get later on. Umechatzi Matei Menashe, as well as half of Menashe, of course we mean the western half of Menashe, not the half that's going to be on the other side of the Yarden. So you get the western half of Menashe, Bagoral Arim Aser. They're going to get 10 cities. So what you end up with is 13 cities for the Kohanim, 10 cities for the rest of Kehas, because they're not going to be, you know, as large, the rest of Kehas. Maybe that's the reason why. Or maybe it's because the Kohanim have need of more. That could be. But you have 10 cities for them. And they're also in this contiguous area, and they're right next to the Kohanim. Right? If you think of where they are, based on the maps that we've seen, they're fairly close. V'livnei Gershon, and then we go to Gershon. So we're going a step down in holiness. V'livnei Gershon, mimishpachos matei Yisachar, umimatei Asher, umimatei Naftali, umechatzi matei Menashe babashan, bagoral arim shlosh esrei. Gershon also gets 13 cities from Yisachar, Asher, and Naftali. Asher and Naftali, remember, were the very north. Right there at the top, Yisachar is right below them, as well as the other half of Menashe on the eastern side of the Yarden. That's where Gershon is going to be, north and east. And then, Livnei Merari, what's Merari getting? L'mishpachosam, by their families, Mimatei Reuven, that's Reuven on the eastern side of the Yarden, Umimatei Gad, as well as Gad, Umimatei Zivulun, and Zivulun, which was center left, center west, towards the sea, Arim Shtemesre, they get 12 cities. That's your breakdown of who gets to go where.
Talks about it evenly.
What do you mean?
I'm saying Kehat, there are three children. Talks about it, like Kehat gets about a half as opposed to the other brothers.
And correct. It is not divided evenly based on Shevet Levi. That's correct. Why not?
Well, I was going to say the Kohanim maybe is considered divided into fourths, then. Maybe the Kohanim get a quarter of the rest of Kehat. That works out, no? Because it's 13, 10,
right.
13, 12.
So if you take a look, someone who has a chumash, read me please from Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Ches, chapter 35, sentence 8. I was going to put it on the sheet. I think I must have run out of room. Oh, I know it was on the sheet last time. That's
but
why.
Are they going by numbers as well? Like, we spent so much time.
What do you mean? Go ahead. No.
We spent so much time with
the Shvatim saying that, you know, based on the size and all that, so maybe, so is this also based on
right, so take a look now at Bamidbar Perek Lamed Hei Pasuk Ches, good. Chapter 35, sentence 8, someone read that out. English is fine.
Okay. And the cities which you shall give shall be the possession of the children of Israel. From them that have many you shall give many, and from them that have few you shall give few. Everyone shall give of the cities to the Levites according to his inheritance which he inherits.
It's based on the givers.
The ones that got more land give more land.
The problem is, as Abarbanel notes, that it's not true. Because we actually had an even number per tribe. With one exception, they were all the same. How many cities per tribe are we giving?
Between
13. No, per tribe. Not per recipients,
four.
Per tribe.
Four.
That's correct. It is four per Shevet. The only is one exception to that, as we'll see, which is Yehuda is going to give eight, but Shimon is only going to give one. But that's because Shimon only has cities within Yehuda. That's going to throw things off. We'll see that later in the parak.
So we don't know the size of the cities.
We don't know the size of the cities, but Abarbanel says also it's about quality of land. You know, there are cities that are really great, and you can farm there, and you can do whatever you want to do there, and then there are cities that are rocky terrain that are useless. And so he suggests that that's balanced out in terms of how this is going to work. And the fact that the Pasuk may say you're giving based on size, but it's quality based on size, not number of cities based on size. Right. And so I would suggest the same thing is true in terms of the receivers of it. They each may get, one may get more cities than the other, but they're getting what they need fundamentally. That would be the way I would break it down. But take a look at source number 8, please. This is Malbim. Malbim tries to explain who went where and why. And he says, more or less where I was going with this, he says, "Vagorala lakfiro ilahem lefi seder malasim bakodesh." The lottery fell out for them based on their level of sanctity. Shekemosha be'evrei hagviya, just like of the limbs in the body. Kol ever hashachen yoser el halev hu ma'ula yoser. He says the parts of the body that are closer to the heart are more elevated. So there, take that feet. Umizgo zach b'yeser se'es, and it has a more pure nature to it. Kain b'nei Aharon shayu krovim el hamishkan v'hamikdash. So too, the sons of Aharon, the Kohanim, they're closer to the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. V'chein nafal goralam v'chilek Yehuda Shimon u'Binyamin shayu saviv l'hamikdash. Their portion was in Shimon, Yehuda, Binyamin, those that are closer to the Beis Hamikdash, and they're closer to the house of David. Then you have the rest of Kehat. They are also with the heart. What they carried in the Midbar was the Aron, the Shulchan that had the special bread that you're bringing in the Beis HaMikdash, the holy implements. So they get to be in Ephraim. Done. Half of Menashe. Shenachlas Yosef Haisa Eitan Nachlas Binyamin. He gives you the whole location, which we've already seen, so I'm going to skip it. But the point is, they're right near the Beis Hamikdash. Then he goes through Gershom. And Gershon are the ones who carry the actual Mishkan, in the sense that they carry the curtains of the Mishkan. And he says they are compared to Madregas Habasar Hachofif al Ha'ibrim HaPnimiyim HaSochim al Halev. They're like the flesh that covers the organs that are around the heart. And therefore, they get to be sort of the next layer out. And then Merari carries the bones of the Mishkan. They carry the beams and boards and posts and the like. So he says that's like sort of like the skin and bones on the outside of the body, or the bones he views as being also inferior within the body. And therefore, they get sort of the farthest extreme among the cities. And that's the way that he looks at it, trying to explain the logic in where each one ended up.
So,
yeah.
This is where I, again, have an issue. Like,
yeah.
If we just said today, I like this child the most, this child the next most, and this child the next most,
I mean, this is a very bad role modeling, again, of everybody knowing this is the most important child. It's constantly coming up, those kind of situations. How horrible is that? Well, you're the least important, so you're getting the least important things. And where does that leave you? And then how many, I mean, why would those people continue, you know, doing what they need to do when they're already saying, I'm already pushing you off to the side because we don't think you're so important.
Right. That's right. So, two things. Number one is that they're not children. Right, they're
worse.
They're adults.
They were.
No, but I'm just
they
saying.
They probably did it from the time they were children, and
no, I
there was always
them.
Like this. Wasn't there always this?
Right.
Higher, like I'm this one's kid. I'm that one's kid.
Yeah.
Like there was always.
Right.
This,
now
like,
the other thing I'm going to say, the other thing I'm going to say on it is, and this is a loaded statement, but I think it's true, is that Judaism as a whole does not define a person's value based on their public position, meaning that the public positions of Judaism have always had, going back to the Chumash, a caste system in which the Kohanim are the coolest and they get to do these things, and then Yehuda is going to get to have the Malchus and no one else can be a king, and if you make the mistake of being a king from Binyamin like Shaul did, it's only a matter of time before you're gone. You have Kohanim, you have Levim. Within Levim, as you're seeing here, there's this division of, well, they're the closest ones, they're the best of the Levim, and the ones who are lower than them and the ones who are lower than them. You always find such a thing. For that matter, we saw with Yisachar and Zebulun, mm-hmm. right? And Yisachar is going to learn, and Zebulun is going to support it.
Even going back further, like one brother makes it and one brother doesn't.
Well, I would distinguish between that and this, because in this, everybody's in. Everyone's part of Bnei Yisrael. There, Esav is out.
Right.
Yishmael is out.
But
the big difference between them is that with Esav and Yishmael, it's based on merit. Here, we haven't seen anything about merit. It isn't that so-and-so son of Gershon is no good, whereas, you know, Yitzhar is great, and therefore Yitzhar is going to get, you know, whatever he's going to get. It's not played out that way. Esav is kicked out because he is the hunter and he wants to kill his brother, right? Those are, you know, disqualifications. Yishmael also is wild and a threat to Yitzchak and so forth. And so he is also, you know, sent on his way. We don't know anything about any of these getting or not getting. The only thing we know, I guess, is that we're told that Moshe loses his status as potential Kohen because of his refusal. Where after his persistent refusal of the job, Hashem says, yes, I know, you have your brother Aharon, I get it. And he's going to get to do all the things that you wanted, you know, that you otherwise would have done. So Moshe loses it on a merit thing, according to that
Medrash.
The Medrash there is picking up on a problem in the Pasuk. The problem in the Pasuk is that Hashem says to Moshe, Halo Aharon Achicha HaLevi, Yadati ki daber yadaberhu. Hashem says to Moshe, after Moshe's nth refusal, he says, yes, I know, your brother Aharon the Levi knows how to speak. And the Medrash is bothered, because Medrash always has an ear for language. Why does Hashem need to tell Moshe, your brother Aharon is a descendant of Levi? Does Moshe not know what's on his driver's license? I mean, Moshe is a Levi. What in the world is he telling him? And for that matter, why is he saying, your brother? Right? Moshe knows he's his brother. So the Medrash picks up on the brother thing and says, he is your brother, and yet he's going to be happy that you're getting your position, that he's going to be your Navi. Even though he is your brother, and he might be jealous and so forth, he's going to be happy doing this. And as far as the Pasuk continues to say, Rachav Asamach Belibo, he'll be happy. But also, it says he's a Levi to make the point, he was a Levi, and now he's going to end up being the Kohen. Because of your refusal, that's what the Medrash is picking up on. That's our basis for saying that they're linked. You could easily make the argument that Moshe was never meant to be a Kohen; he had enough to do. But in any case, going back to you know this point within the conversation, the Jews were not supposed to look at being a non-Kohen or being a non-Levi and saying, "Well, I guess that means that God doesn't want me." That means that I am inferior. Man, this is my public role. This is the job that I do, and they have this job to do. And in the context of doing that job, yes, it's appropriate that they be closer to the Beis HaMikdash. In the context of my role, I'm not going to be closer to the Beis HaMikdash. And the proof...
That's not what this says.
even because of the way the Malbim is putting it, you're right, he's attaching more of a value than we usually do. The Torah does not, and the Torah goes the opposite direction. If you look at the building of the first Beis HaMikdash, or even before that, I'm sorry, you'll see it at the Beis HaMikdash, but even the Mishkan. Who are the two people who build the Mishkan? Bezalel and? That's the problem, is I'll get the headlines. If you go back to Parashas Kisisa, you find the builders of the Mishkan, Kisisa Bayakov Kudei, the builders of the Mishkan are the Bezalel and Ahaliyav. Bezalel is Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur Lamate. Thank you. Bezalel ben Uri ben Chur Lamate Yehuda. Bezalel, who is from Yehuda. We're already to 27. It's not your fault.
Sorry, I have to take my
daughter. It's fine. But Bezalel is from Yehuda, and Ahaliyav, to make a long story short, is from Dan. Dan, who is the last of the tribes when they travel, Dan, who is one of the outliers, he's the, you know, he's distant, he's in fact from one of the Shvachot, he's from Bilha, he's not from, you know, Rachel and Leah, and the point is made that it's the two of them, royalty, so to speak, Yehuda, and average guy from Dan. Ditto when it comes to creating the Beis HaMikdash, you have Shlomo, who is, of course, you know, Yehuda Malchus, the Melech, and then he also brings in a fellow also whose lineage, it's either Dan or Naphtali, I forget right now, to work with him, but the same type of a situation in order to make clear this message that ultimately it's a meritocracy. It's not about who you came from. You can be righteous, and your righteousness can be recognized no matter what your lineage is. But in terms of the system in general, you bet, the public roles within Judaism are decidedly class-oriented with all the weight that carries with it. I have no illusions. I'm sure there were people who were annoyed and upset by it. You know, there were people who said, well, I guess that means I'm a second-class citizen within society.
Well,
and so
forth. Had 12 brothers and they were mad at Joseph. How do you expect hundreds of people? I'm sure they're mad at somebody.
Was that Korach?
Well, it's Korach even within. Korach is a more dramatic case because Korach is given stuff. Yeah. He's still not happy. And not only that, but his was explicitly an assignment from God to Moshe, and yet he's still kvetching about it, whereas here, how many of them saw the lottery? How many of them were cognizant of, you know, who gets to do what? But yes, that is the way the system was broken down for a whole host of reasons, which if it wasn't already 2:30, we could spend, like, you know, real time on. But the caste system is created with an eye towards saying there are a whole bunch of jobs that need to happen. Everybody will have roles that they will play. And, sorry?
I think we should read the rest of the chapter earlier.
And that's the and that's the way it plays out. Right, maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it next week, because we're going to have to read a whole bunch of stuff in here. All right. Good. Thank you very much.